Blog Talk Radio.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man. You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the measuring stick. Let's go, hook him up! I'm gonna drag you until I wear your Texas ass out.
The game is ours to play.
And hell, I might even get on top of my wife tonight.
Welcome to another edition of Over the Top Radio. I am your host, Ed, in San Antonio, and I'm joined by one of my co-hosts, Craig. What's going on, Craig?
I was awakened this morning by a loud clap of thunder, and in the distance, I could hear a faint, faint scream coming from the hills. I thought, Brian?
Dude, he has to be dead by now, so... Next week we'll be doing his memorial show.
It's been horrible weather here the last 12 hours. Just the skies opened up and we've had thunder and lightning and it's been pretty nutty here the last few weeks. And I can just imagine him and everybody else around him being absolutely miserable right now.
And that news makes me very, very happy. And it's giving me a warm feeling inside.
Well, I do what I can.
We have our other co-host on the line. What's going on, Sightcher?
Yeah, there you go.
It's a U, not a Y. You've been doing this long enough to not make that mistake.
Well, I wasn't paying attention, okay? I must have been high or something.
Okay. I wonder if Brian's if the guy in the Giant Gonzalez outfit has scared Brian and the rest of the marks yet.
You should have. You and Vinny should have got Sasquatch outfits and did like a surprise attack on him like last night or tonight.
Well, to be honest, Vinny and I, obviously the smarter of the three. We stayed where it was warm and inside.
Yeah, the third in his camouflage outfit.
Thank you. I hope he did buy the hat. And by the way, 37 years old, and can't match his socks.
You'd think Whitney would do that for him, but...
Right.
I guess not. I guess she gave up on that. I made sure to let her know that she needs to get that life insurance policy as soon as possible, because, like I say, he's not going to live past the night.
I actually have two questions on the board. Question number one, is Brian dead? Randy, I'm not sure, but I'm hoping. And number two...
I texted and I didn't get a text back, so it's looking good.
Well, he's in the hills, crying out loud. Number two, if you had the choice between Ed and Brent, on who would you allow to spend the night at your house for one night, who would you pick? This is a tough one. I'll answer next week after a long thought.
Yeah, because they bring over some weed at least.
I'll be nice and go outside and smoke it.
Oh, thanks. And my neighbors are wondering what's going on around here.
I'm sure all your neighbors smoke pot, Craig. I'm sure you're the only person in the whole neighborhood who does it.
So better question is who would Craig throw out? End up throwing out first. That's the better question.
Easily.
I made it an hour in his house one time without getting kicked out.
Brent was here for, not here, but at my old home for one pay-per-view. And that's it. I actually do owe him one pay-per-view here, but he's forgotten and I'm not going to remind him.
Yeah, I would. Well, I don't know. Brent is actually entertaining. I'll never forget the moment I met him. Or I shouldn't even say I met him because I didn't actually talk to him until like the next day. But we went to, remember when, I don't think you went to it. Did you didn't go to the buffet dinner after like the wedding rehearsal, right?
I went to the one after the wedding rehearsal. I didn't go to the one after the wedding proper, no.
Okay, yeah. So anyway, me and Rodney, we get to this buffet, and of course, we don't know anybody but other than Brian, Whitney, you, and Vinny. So we're just standing there just waiting for one of you guys to come along because we have no idea. And the first person we see walking, and we recognize them, you know, off the bat because of the pictures on the board, is Brent Kerman walking and just looking just like we totally imagined Brent Kerman would look. And we thought he was being followed by a little old Asian man. The little old Asian man ended up being a Hispanic fellow by the name of Carlos, who happens to be Brian's dad. But we thought he was a little Asian man. Me and Rodney are like, why is Brent with this little Asian man?
Yes.
And then we were like, and then I was like, Rodney, you want to go introduce ourselves or you just want to watch him? And Rodney was like, oh, let's just watch him. So we watched Brent grill the people at the front of the buffet, asking them stuff if there's freaking pork or is there anything kosher, and just like a million questions like that, just like you would expect Brent Kerman to do. And it was actually pretty awesome meeting Brent Kerman for that weekend, but I guess I could see how he could get on your nerves if it was longer than that.
Yeah, he's an interesting cat. I was actually up in Seattle last weekend. I had heard about this amazing ice cream place called Molly Moon's, and we were goofing off around in the city, and I decided to go up there and try some of this amazing ice cream. Easily the best ice cream I've ever had, by the way. Molly Moon's in Seattle. So I, you know, hit my iPhone and I located myself and tagged myself on Facebook, and 2 minutes later, Brent is sending me a message, where are you in the city? I am so close to you. We should get together.
You said no?
No, we didn't get together. Oh, sorry, Brent, I'm at home now. Anyway, he's an interesting fellow.
That's funny. Cool. Well, before we get started on our topic, is there anything else that we want to talk about today? I'll start with Citrare.
No. Why? Is there something we're supposed to?
No. Craig, anything you want to talk about before the topic?
Yeah, I want to talk about this nut job in Colorado that decided it was a good idea to go shoot up a Batman film. I've never been so angry at 6 o'clock in the morning than I was when I turned on my TV and saw the news this morning. And I don't want to get up on a soapbox or anything like that, but just put a bullet in this guy's head and do us all a favor.
Was the movie that bad?
No, the movie was that great.
Oh, I've not heard this news, so it's the first time I'm hearing this.
You're kidding me. Yeah, some whack job at the midnight showing of the Batman film in Colorado, Aurora, Colorado. This guy comes in the back door in the emergency exit, basically.
How did he get in? Aren't those supposed to be locked from the outside? I mean, that sounds like someone let him in.
Either that or obviously he scouted the place beforehand. Comes in the back door, throws a couple of tear gas canisters. From what I've heard on the news, the people were confused because they thought it was part of the movie or he thought it was some character that was dressed up for said movie, and he pulls out a couple of guns and starts shooting the place up, and the next thing you know, there's 15 people dead and 38 wounded.
Jesus Christ. That's terrible.
Right? Yeah. So a big F you to that guy, and I hope you die a horrible, horrible death.
That's one of those crimes where you think that, you know, when the cops are going to catch him, that they should have, like, in some kind of, like, waiver that they get to kill the dude when someone does something so bad instead of just, like, capturing the dude.
Yeah. And then they went to his apartment, and it's booby-trapped, and I don't know if they ever got in or what the deal was, but what a nut job. Let's get these people some help. Get them off the streets, for crying out loud.
Sounds like one of those guys that eventually ends up killing himself or suicide by cop or something like that.
Yeah, well, they took him in without incident, so he's a wuss.
Yeah, that was probably his big plan, was to have a final gun show with the cops, but I'm sure he pushed out. And I saw, like, a picture from someone who posted their shirt they were wearing, and the freaking bullet is, like, just a little death to their sternum would be. And you see the hole going out, and you see blood around the hole. It's like, how the hell did that guy even survive that shot?
Just angered me this morning when I watched the news before I went to work. So anyway, thoughts and prayers are with the people and families that are affected by this.
I kind of want to make a comment, but I know I'll get in trouble if I do, so I think I'm just going to bite my tongue on this one.
Atta boy.
But at least three of the people who were killed shouldn't have been in the movie theater at the time. But other than that, let's go ahead and start on our topic, because this Monday, Raw goes to 3 hours, which I'm actually looking forward to, because Monday is my favorite night of the week, because just for the simple fact that there's wrestling on. You know, because I'm not like a super snob like other people who may be on this line and just hate wrestling in general. But so I'm excited about that. It's also the 1,000th episode of Raw. So what we decided to do is talk about the greatest moments and matches from the history of Raw. My co-host wanted to bring up matches, but it's like, honestly, the things that I remember are the angles and stories. I don't really remember too many matches, honestly, you know. So
I think we should
probably concentrate on moments. And then, of course, the matches that we do remember, of course, they would be good enough to talk about since we do remember them. Because there has to be 1,000 Raw, there's got to be 100,000 matches, something like that, you know. So we'll just start bringing up different stuff. And, you know, so I'm actually excited. They got plenty of shit on the show book, so it can't help but be good. And I'm actually excited to see who's going to show up that we haven't heard about yet. So I'm actually probably one of the few people looking forward to it.
By the way, are you inferring that I don't like wrestling and I won't be watching?
You watch wrestling, but you don't like wrestling.
Oh, I don't know about that.
I think
unless it's Davey Richards or some...
Oh, you've got me all wrong.
Mark, you know, kind of like, you know, you kind of have... Let's be honest, Craig, and I'm nothing against you personally, but you are kind of a wrestling snob.
Okay.
Well, I think he just likes stuff that's good and hates stuff that's bad.
No, dude, He hates so much stuff that's good.
Well, if it's everybody's different. Not everybody's going to say it the same way everybody does.
That's why I said it wasn't personal.
Well, what was something he might dislike that you enjoyed?
Yeah.
Tell me.
There's too many to tell. I have to really think about it.
Oh, God, come on. Okay.
Well, let me say this.
We'll hit about 5 topics just tonight.
Let me say this. I don't dislike wrestling. I love wrestling. I watch Raw live. I don't watch it on tape delay. I don't watch it on my DVR later. I watch it live. And I can start watching TNA starting next week because DirecTV is now done with all that. But I'll watch that. I watch ROH. I'm failing to see where I don't like wrestling. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that doesn't make sense and it upsets me. But that hasn't turned me off from watching it.
Well, I think sometimes you go into certain storylines or skits or whatever with the impression that you're already going to hate it.
Well, they've given us a reason to.
That's true, I guess, but I mean, like I said, nothing personal. It's just my opinion of Craig's view. I'm sure Craig thinks I'm an idiot for liking every DMZ this match.
Well, that's another story for another time. But I'm even looking forward to the wedding. I cannot wait for the wedding on Monday, just to see what cornball antics they come up with.
I'm excited for it, but I'm a little worried because it's only a 1 week where they got the plan. Like they did get all the other welded weddings were built. You know what I mean? And all the weddings have been great, as far as I mean. A lot of people might disagree with me, but I think all the weddings are great. As crazy and stupid as most of them were, I enjoyed almost every single one of them. So I'm a little worried that it could be better, but I'm sure Daniel Bryan will just make it great despite being
absolutely
Daniel Bryan.
No,
she's pretty good. I mean, I like AJ. There's a lot of AJ hate, but I think she's done a good job. It's not her fault that they made her the focal point. You know,
that's true.
What's she going to do, tell them no?
You can't do that.
Well, she has a chance. She has a chance to become the focal point of the women's division. She's not. I'm not going to try. You know, I can't blame her for like, you know, not wanting to be it. I mean, every girl would jump at that position. And it's like, and it's good for them because that's a pretty big position to have when you're the top diva. And with all the girls leaving, you know, everything's up for grabs in the women's division right now.
And did you ever think you'd see Bryan Danielson getting married on WWE TV?
No. Absolutely not.
That's a miracle he even got on TV in the first place.
Right.
But that'll probably be one of my top 10 favorite moments of the 1,000 episodes coming this Monday.
What were the other weddings on Raw while we're talking, since we're going to go back and talk about some stuff?
Well, I think a couple of them were on SmackDown.
Yeah, Billy and Chucky.
That was SmackDown.
And Teddy's weddings were on SmackDown.
Corey Wilson and Al Wilson and Dawn Marie, and she fucked him to death.
And then didn't Edge and Vicky get married on SmackDown?
Yeah, they got married on SmackDown. I don't think they actually had a wedding. They said they got married earlier in the day. I think they had the reception on SmackDown.
Kane and Lita was on Raw, right?
Yeah, Kane and Lita. And
how about
Triple H
Lita
and Orton, Test and Stephanie? And
yeah.
I guess Triple H and Stephanie.
Lita and Edge was on Raw, because that was the one where the preacher said, "Now, you know, before God," and then he looks down and he says, "Jesus Christ," and Kane's head pops out of the ring.
Oh, speaking of weddings, top maybe the greatest moment ever in the history of Raw is the Kane Lita wedding where Trish Stratus came out in her white lingerie. I mean,
and they trolled the fans with the Matt Hardy music because he was fired.
Right.
That was awesome. The drive-by wedding with Steph and Hunter.
Sure.
Yeah, that was awesome.
That was stupid.
Hunter was awesome when he was doing that.
Like that would hold up anywhere.
I love how he talked out of the corner of his mouth. I do.
Yeah, that was pretty great.
I remember when who was that wrestling fan? The Green Lantern fan got engaged on Raw.
Shut up! I don't remember this really.
What? Yeah, this was like in '93 on one of the first live episodes. Green Lantern fan proposed to his girlfriend on Raw.
Wow.
Wow.
Huh.
And we were sitting just inches away from that geek at the ROH shows this past year.
Yep.
Of course, I was the only person who knew who he was.
Yep.
I just remembered hearing the name before. I'm like, Green Lantern. Derek Bergen almost got into a fist fight with him at a show or something. So that's how I knew the name Green Lantern fan. So I thought, I see this geek with a Green Lantern shirt. I'm like, it's got to be the Green Lantern fan.
Right.
Is he one of those snobs you were talking about?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Yeah. Even worse than Craig, so.
How dare you.
But, who wants to start?
Triple H and Stephanie, when they did to renew their vows, did we bring that one up?
No.
And you remember she had faked the hired an actor to be the doctor, show him the sonogram.
Oh, yeah.
Everything looks smashing. And then Linda McMahon's sending him a tape, and he's like, "We're smashing prices down," or something. He was like on some kind of commercial.
Mm.
And he said, send her in the valley. He said, "I see you as you truly are, no good lying bitch," and then gave Vince the pedigree right there in the ring, and that was it for that.
Yeah, they showed this on Raw like 2 weeks ago. They showed clips
and
of this.
The best thing was, she flipped out after Triple H just walked out, and it shows her screaming, but they, like, put this dragon roller in.
Yeah.
Like, when she's screaming, and it was, like, the greatest thing I've ever seen.
And, like, the spittle was connected to the top and the bottom lip as she was roaring. And there was this line of spittle, and it looked evil. And it was awesome.
And they actually didn't have to change the voice that much. I mean, she had a pretty fucking bad Godzilla voice as it was.
That's true. Yeah, that was pretty darn good. I'll go. This one I was actually at. This happened at the Tacoma Dome. And DX came dressed up like the Nation of Domination, including X-Pac in full catcher's gear without the mask, shoe polish, and Mizark written across his chest for Mark Henry.
I would put this like one of the five funniest moments of all time on the show.
I was in the crowd and tears were rolling down my face. It had Triple H dressed up like The Rock, and as I said, X-Pac as Mark Henry, and just amazing.
Road Dogg is D'Lo Brown with a chest protector.
Right.
And Road Dogg was the best part of the skit because he kept like repeating everything Hunter would say.
That damn kid, Jason Sensation, was Owen Hart. He was awesome.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, he was absolutely fantastic.
He did really need to bring the Outlaws and X-Pac back for the DX thing on Monday.
Hmm. That would be good.
Yeah. Not China.
They should all be available.
On a death on TV or anything.
I haven't seen it yet, but I've seen. Have you seen the preview for the Avengers Triple X Prodigy port, whatever you call it?
No, and I don't plan to. I don't plan to watch the previews. I don't plan to watch any part.
She's the She-Hawk, but she's fucking and covered in green paint.
Okay. Move along, kiddies.
She's got the heebie-jeebies.
But yeah, that was awesome. I mean, everything about that skit was back from Raw. Really was fucking. Some people bitch about some of the things that they did, but when they could get away with doing more shit like that, it was so much better and more entertaining.
That kind of shit was fresh back then, though. You know, it happens now, and we've just been there and done that. But that kind of stuff was kind of fresh back then, and. Yeah. That was when they had first taken over the ratings from WCW Nitro.
they over the years, DX has done some great skits where they dress up like the other, you know, their foes at the time. And I don't mean to step all over Ed's, but along that tip, we had Shawn Michaels and Triple H come dressed up like Shane and Vince. And when Shawn Michaels was imitating Shane's little dance, literally one of the funniest things I've ever seen on TV.
I just love Triple H doing the Vince walk.
Yeah.
They shot like a wide shot of the crowd and Vince's music hit, and they came out and you couldn't really see who it was. And
mm-hmm.
JR said, "Wait just a second." Then the next shot is a close-up of Triple H doing that Vince walk to the ring, and mm-hmm. he just says, "Oh, my God."
The Vince walk, that's like the greatest walk to the entrance ever, I mean.
Yeah.
Only he could do that.
I remember when they were messing with his, with the microphones when Vince was cutting a promo. And they made him sound like Darth Vader. And they drew a little box like he was a cartoon and said, "I like cock."
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, that was pretty good. But probably everyone probably remembers the most famous DX moment, and that'll be the one of the ones they even showed on the big shows leading up to it, and that's got to be when they invaded WCW. I mean, that was just so, like, wow. Like, that's, you talk about going, like, a low blow or just, like, you're, like, kind of, wow, that's kind of fucked up, but it was just so awesome. And to me, I think, like, Road Dogg and Billy Gunn just were, like, you know, they had all these, like, little lines kind of, like, in the background that were just fucking making me laugh. Like, when Billy Gunn started talking about Costco or Sam's Club or something. And talking about, I got a car, we could go get a bag of chili cheese Fritos or, you know, it was hilarious. Yeah. But, yeah, that was awesome. I mean, and then X-Pac, when he's all banging on the door, can you tell Eric Bischoff, Sean Waltman wants to speak to him? I mean, that was just one of the best things ever. I mean, I can only imagine what the guys on Nitro were thinking because, you know, at the time, they were both watching each other's show live as it was going while they were doing their show.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think they taped that earlier in the day. And then they showed up later.
Oh, okay.
I love it how they were interviewing fans, you know, how much did you pay for your ticket tonight here? Oh, it was free. And on and on.
They went so far as to say, as to, like, make their own graphic that said free tickets on the Nitro sign.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, remember, they had a cannon there, and like, Triple H, you know, he's giving the orders to the troops, and Billy Gunn's sitting there, he's got the cannon, he's, like, straddling the cannon, it's between his legs, and it's pointing up,
yeah.
And he says, at ease, and then the cannon goes down.
Oh, they were awesome.
And then they were looking for Hunter, and Billy Gunn kept asking Road Dogg where Hunter was. He said, "I don't know Rockabilly. Why don't you go find him?"
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah, was good.
Go ahead, Katrina.
What was funny was, I like the whole choppy, choppy PP thing.
Of course you did.
I thought that was awesome. Valvinus, when that character first came in, he had such a good build-up with those videos.
Mm-hmm.
Those porn videos and stuff like that. He was in one, like, with Jenna Jameson or something.
Yeah.
I remember Shawn Michaels was doing commentary one week, and he said...
He had a good couple-year run when he first came in.
Yeah, I remember Shawn Michaels was, like, doing commentary ringside, and they went to the latest Valvinus video, and he said, Shawn says, "Hey, I got a lot of these." And then he fell in love with Yamaguchi-san's wife from Kai and Tai.
Right.
Was that when Taka turned on him, or was that before Taka turned on him?
Yeah, because that was his sister.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, and he turned on him, and they stripped him down, and they took him backstage. It's like right at the end of the show. And he's just hung from the ceiling, and his pants are down, and you see... Yamaguchi-san, he's got the sword ready. And then all of a sudden the show ends or the lights goes off or something, and we're left to see what happens. And so next week he comes out with he's in a wheelchair, and of all people, John Bobbitt is pushing him to the ring. I mean, legitimately, it was John Bobbitt. And so it was just a ruse, and he got the woman in there, and he broke up with her. He said, "Here, I got a parting gift for you. You're going to need these." And he tossed her a couple of Duracell batteries.
I love Val when he first came in. Just like his opening entrance music was just so epic. There's like, you see like this, there's a couple of bushes in the front. And then you see this big purple helmet behind the bush. And then he starts to stand up slowly, like he's rising from the back of the bush. It's just phenomenal.
He was a guy. He was like, just do those videos. He was really over when he first came in.
Oh yeah,
they played those videos every week.
You think they would remember stuff like that and do videos like that for all the new people, but they don't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
You remember they got mad at him after his first match, though. Because his first match, I think, was by Flash Funk. Was it Flash Funk? And it kind of sucked, so they kind of...
Oh.
I just remember them being kind of mad at him or something, and then, like, but his next match was pretty good, and he started doing better. But they were like, it was one of those where he almost blew it the first match.
Yeah. I mean, he was a good worker. I always liked him.
He's a former CMLL world champion.
Yeah. Was his name Steel? Is that right?
Yeah, Steel.
I think so.
Yeah.
Remember he brought Big Girl Goldust back? Remember when he slept with Terry?
Mm.
That's right. And that weird stuff Dustin Rhodes was doing, he was going around, he went to the commentary desk and asked Jerry Lawler and Jim Ross if they accept Jesus Christ as their savior. He was doing that Jesus stuff.
Oh, that's right. And it could have been a shoot, that whole sleeping with Terry thing, if New Jack's taught me anything.
Well, she has messed around with him, I mean, even back in the old WCW days, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of, while we're talking about his debut, I'll go to probably my favorite debut of all time was Chris Jericho in Chicago with The Rock.
Yeah. Yeah, the back.
When his name flashed across that screen, he got that enormous pop. I said, holy shit.
Yeah.
I just remember.
It was one of the best pops I ever heard.
Yeah. Yeah, a little before that, at the time I didn't have a computer, so every once in a while I'd go to a friend's house that did, and that's when I first started checking out all the different, you know, basically copy and paste sites at the time. And I just remember every time, like, the big news of the day is, like, Chris Jericho. What's Chris Jericho going to do? Where is he going to go? Is he going to stay? Is he going to go? And that was, like, it was just so much buildup just on the internet about him, what was going to happen. And then I guess it kind of got out right before, but this is back before the internet was, you know, not as, like, prevalent as it is now. And I pretty much knew it was him. And then when he came out and they show the name and you just hear the pop, I mean, it was just one of the most perfect entrances ever. It made him he went from mid-card WCW to main event WWE within seconds.
Yeah, I mean, it showed just how over he had gotten in WCW and the fools couldn't realize it.
Yeah.
I mean, he was over. I mean, he was doing so much stupid shit. It's like they kind of, like the stuff with Goldberg. I mean, that's some of the best shit that was on WCW TV at the time.
Yeah. Well,
especially like the pay-per-view when he did the Spinal Tap shit and got lost in the back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, he was just, everything he did in WCW was awesome, but you could tell he was being buried or they didn't care, but he still got that shit over.
Yeah, that was like one of those, I mean, getting letting him get away, shit, that's just fucking stupid. Especially when you see the response he got at that first show, at first Raw he was on.
And then, you know, they put him, you know, with Rock right off the bat. I mean, you can't get a bigger rub than that at the time.
Yeah.
Someone should have made sound clips of some of these moments.
Yep. I have to hire staff.
So I'll go next. I'm actually going to bring up a match. It was from it was from 2005, Shawn Michaels and Shelton Benjamin. This match was awesome and capped off by one of the greatest finishes of all time. Shelton Benjamin did the springboard for his finisher, and Shawn, with the absolute perfect timing, super kicked him out of midair, and it was one of the most incredible spot finishes to a match ever.
I just remember people leaping out of their seats. It rings that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was
so awesome. Jim Ross said, oh, good Lord in heaven, after he hit that kick.
The only thing better than that was the RKO off the Shooting Star Press, as far as timing-wise.
And that was a run-in. Awesome. That was stupid.
It was stupid for when they did it, but, I mean, still, it was one of the most incredible things they ever did. I mean, that thing, that the timing on that had to be perfect, or else they would have crashed and burned big time.
I wonder how many times they practiced that.
I don't know, Evan, he's kind of crazy. I could see him doing it over and over again.
Craig,
I did mention you could have had dinner with my good friend Evan Bourne if you would have come to Vegas with us, right?
Yeah.
You also could have been hanging out at the pool with Chad Gaspard.
Okay.
just letting you know, you miss out, and you, you don't think these guys are my friends, but, you know.
Big stars like
every year,
they love
hanging out with them.
I have dined with kings and queens, and I'm talking the kings of wrestling, so you weren't there, so there you go.
Yeah, shut up. So, my turn finally, and can I finally stop being skipped?
Yes, yes, go ahead.
Okay, well, I just got reminded about this match because I actually just kind of saw it on Facebook, and it'll probably be go down as the greatest women's match or Divas match on WWE Raw history, and that has to be the one where they let Trish and Lita close out the show, and they were having one hell of a match, and who can ever forget Lita doing the Scorpion when she went for the tope outside. I mean, it was just, it looked like she killed herself.
Like she broke her back
like
or something.
Perfect Scorpion form, I mean, but, you know, she survived it. And I mean, and even Craig has to admit that that was a hell of a match.
It was a very good match, yes. There was nothing wrong with that match.
It literally might be the greatest Divas match on Raw's history. I mean, that match was good.
No, I go with the only other Divas match that closed the show was Lita beating Stephanie for the title with Rock as a referee.
Yeah, that was pretty good. I mean, as far as, like, depending on, like, with all the stuff going on, I mean, that made it good. But as far as, like, an actual match, the Trish Lita one was better. But they were both pretty awesome. And it's a shame Lita and Trish are gone because looking back now, you just see that how much better they are than the girls they have now. And Lita was never really a great promo. She just had great presence. And you can't compare what they have now to what they had then. I mean, that period of Divas that they had, you had freaking Trish. You had Lita. You had Tori. You had Stacy. You had Dawn.
Victoria. Mickey James.
Victoria. You know, you couldn't. You can't hold a candle to what they once had to what they have now. I mean, they're getting, you know, they've lost the Divas. They're probably going to lose Kelly. They're probably going to lose Eve, you know. I mean,
they got rid of Kong.
Mid-card chicks who are very, very close to moving up because of all the people leaving that are quitting on them. So it's like, you know.
Karma quit last week, or either she got released or whatever.
Which one?
Karma.
Who?
Karma.
Oh, Karma. Oh, I couldn't understand you. I'm sorry. You had your hick voice going. Yeah, well, Karma, and then that one Maxine quit, and, you know, actually it's kind of good that they're bringing in Cerro Del Rey. Maybe she'll actually get to do something, but
maybe
who knows?
They're changing stuff up. Maybe they're bringing girls like her in, so maybe, you know, they won't be like the models that, you know, quit.
Yeah.
They're going to do something there.
It would be badass if they bring in Hero and her and then just get a Sari away from Escada and make them, I guess they can be the kings of wrestling, but put them together, the three of them, that, you know, it'd be something I like. I don't think that they'd go for it, but at least it would be entertaining to me. I thought they were awesome when they were together.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
All right, go ahead and go, Couture.
Okay, I'll go with one of the first from 93, one of the first episodes. Well, not one of the first episodes, but one of the first really big episodes was I would say maybe probably the biggest upset maybe of all time was when 1-2-3 Kid beat Razor Ramon.
Yeah. I was going to bring that up. That was awesome.
And pretty much
absolutely fantastic because they built that up because for like the first, like for 3, 4, maybe 5 weeks, they had Kid just get squashed and killed. I remember he lost a doink.
Didn't he have a different name every time?
Had a different
like
name. It was like Lightning Kid. He was the
Cannonball Kid.
What do you call it? Cannonball Kid.
Kamikaze Kid.
Yeah.
I was actually
angry when I saw the matches where he was getting killed because I had just not that long before seen all his stuff in Global where him and Jerry Lynn were just tearing it up match after match. They had one of the best TV matches I ever seen in my life. the one where they had that 2 out of 3 where they had to hit their like big move and Sean threw the wooden railing. I mean, that's one of the best matches ever. And I, you know, seen that, and I'm like, I see him on Raw, and I'm like, oh yeah, this. And at the time, he looked like he was freaking 14. You know,
how can you not
get behind somebody who's like that young, trying out, and you know, and then like, he's just getting killed. I'm like, fuck. I mean, this, and then when he was gonna wrestle Razor, I'm like, man, he's not gonna get one fucking move. He's getting killed again, and then boom, he wins. It's like, I was like, that's one of the biggest oh my god moments ever on Raw.
And I think a great example of just like instantly making a guy a star.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I always love watching him work. He was so awesome. I don't think he gets credit for how great he really was sometimes. Because people do that, the Xbox Heat bullshit, but he was a great performer.
Yeah, like him and Kane, one of my favorite tag teams. I mean, they were awesome together.
Yeah, even when they put him and Razor together, you know, they would do some tag team stuff. I always liked their tag team. And, he had some great matches.
He had that
awesome
match with Bret Hart not that long after.
Yeah, that was on Raw. And had some great matches like Hakushi and stuff like that.
Yep.
And he had some like really bad neck problems. I mean, he must have broken his neck like 4 or 5 times, it seems like.
Yeah, and he was doing it at a young age, too. I mean, he's really not that old.
Oh,
I mean, he's what, like our age.
Just go back to the match, the big rematch from this match with the $10,000 of Razor's money that he put on the line when they did the match again. And Razor tried to give him Razor's edge. He pulled the mat up and was trying to give it to him on the floor. He gave him a backdrop, and then the kid goes right up there to the top rope, and he's going to do one of those like cannonball somersaults or whatever. He slid,
yeah,
and his head hit smack on concrete. It was like the scariest thing I've ever seen at that time. I don't know how he got out. Then he stole the money and got in a getaway car.
Yeah, that's right. He stole the money.
And then Ted DiBiase berated Razor for losing his money. And that's how Razor turned babyface.
Oh, yeah, that was pretty. And see, they in one instant, you got a guy over, and you also, the next week, had a big turn. I mean, it's like, you know, they actually put a little thought into that. And
maybe
you know,
you got one guy over, and now you made your two hot baby faces out of it.
Yeah. You know, because they booked more than week to week or day to day, you know, back then. And I just remember, like, they had a Raw here, and I think it was the one right before 9/11 or whatever, but that was back when X-Pac was really getting that really bad X-Pac heat. And I just remember my buddy took a side where, like, in the second row, and my buddy, that's the one where I had the Vince Fierce Meltzer sign that got confiscated, like, right before where the commercial breaks on TV. Or you see the guy coming toward me right as they go to commercial. But my buddy had a sign that said, San Antonio's only X-Pac fan. And when him and Albert, well, and I don't know if Justin was with him, but it was Albert for sure. And they're walking to the back, they show the crowd, and they show my friend's sign, and Albert just starts laughing and pointing at the sign, and you just see X-Pac bust out laughing. And then there used to be some syndicated wrestling show on some of the rock stations on Sunday night, and those guys actually brought it up that they saw the sign and thought that the sign was hilarious and stuff. So my friend, he still brings that up today, but it's crazy how he got that X-Pac. I never understood it. I was always a fan of his. I don't know why.
Yeah, I never understood what it was. I think maybe he just, you know, during that time, I think he projected when he was a heel just being just like a fucking, you know, just like a slimy asshole or something. Maybe that's the way he came off.
He was pretty smarmy, and people didn't like that. Came off like a smarmy, jerky heel.
I like him when he was with Hall and Nash, like when they were like just the three of them doing like the Wolfpack stuff in WCW. He's kind of like another version of the Freebirds, and he was Buddy Roberts. You know, he was like the little slimy heel, the little dirtbag.
Yeah.
I think that's part of the heat. It was because he was always like the hang. You know, he was like, okay, like you guys have seen the movie Christmas Story, and they got the big bully, and then they got his little friend, the instigator.
Yeah.
Everyone kind of like, that's who he became. He was that the little swarmy dude who always started the shit for the big dude. You know what I mean?
Or like in the cartoons where you had the big bulldog and you had the little one that just like did whatever he said. And you know, started all the fights and let the Bulldog fight them?
Yeah.
That's what it was. That's a good example. Also on the show where he beat Razor was the one where Marty Jannetty came out of the crowd and beat Shawn for the Intercontinental title.
They had some great matches in that period.
Yeah, that was they had a great match at the Royal Rumble earlier that year. Then Marty got fired, and then this was him coming back. I can't remember which firing this was. Maybe his third firing that he came back from.
You know, we could have had two Shawn Michaels, but one of them had to be too much of a fuck up.
Yeah,
I mean, he was not Shawn's equal as far as singles, but he was pretty goddamn close. And if he would have had his head together, he might not have been as high as Shawn. He could have been way up there. He could have had a great career. But talk about.
Well, I'm sure he was high as Shawn.
Well, the
probably
problem
higher.
Is he stayed higher than Shawn. You know, at least Shawn kind of got his shit together, where Marty never has. I mean, just read his Facebook post. You could tell he's fucking wired as a motherfucker. You know, so yeah, he's been fired more times than anybody in the WWE. I think it's Marty Jannetty by like five or six times.
I can't remember anybody else. Maybe Iron Sheik.
Yeah, probably.
And that was also, you know, he won the title there, and then he got it back on a house show like a couple months later, and that was when Diesel made his debut, interfering so Shawn could get the title back. Started him WWF.
Yeah. I got one. One of my favorite things ever was the Nation of Domination, and this is the when they had the first, the original Nation of Domination was Farouk, and then he had that manager who was the black lawyer manager,
Clarence Mason.
It was Farouk, Clarence Mason, and they had Crush. Who was doing like who had like dreads and like a pierced nose and tattoos and
they played up and just got out of prison, which he actually did.
Yeah. Yeah, he got in prison for drugs and steroids and guns in Hawaii. And then they had who did they have? Was it
Savio?
Savio?
Yeah,
they had Savio. And then they had like three or four extras that would just be like dressed like Muslims, and D'Lo would kind of do one of those guys. And because D'Lo was like the one that was always getting power bombs when, someone was attacking
the Nation. Car or something.
He got power bombed on the car. Like whenever like someone would come out to attack the Nation, the main guys would get away, and you know it was D'Lo who got fucked up, who would take the bump. And they never even really played up who he was too much at the time. And then they had PJ-13. They had Wolfie D and Jamie Ice, who were freaking awesome. You know, doing the song. The song is one of my favorite theme musics ever when they come out singing, "We are the Nation, a Domination."
Yeah.
It was just
one more unforgettable song they ever did in WWF.
Yeah. I mean, it was everything was great. So, but they were kind of getting their asses kicked. I think it was against
Ahmed Johnson.
Other people. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's
yeah.
like, he decides that they're not doing the job, so he starts firing people. So he gets rid of Crush, and he gets rid of Savio, and he gets rid of JC Ice and Luffy D, and then he gets rid of the hanger-ons. And it comes down to Clarence Mason and D'Lo Brown. And D'Lo Brown's got the most worried look on his face, and Clarence Mason is just smiling, you know, and like, you've got to be him. And Farouk keeps going on and on about, like, who's loyal and who's, you know, this and that. And D'Lo's getting more scared and more scared. And Clarence is getting more cocky. And then he tells Clarence to get the step in, I think, or I forgot what he said. But then
he said,
eyes just opened up and he got so happy.
He said, D'Lo, open the rope for Clarence.
That's right. But he was so happy. I mean, God, it was like D'Lo Brown just won the world title.
Yeah, I think it was like, I think it was the next week they had like a big like tag team match, and that's where they introduced Kama Mustafa as another member who became the Godfather, and they were going up against Undertaker and Ahmed Johnson. That's where Ahmed turned on the Undertaker and joined the Nation, and I think he's in the Nation for, 3 weeks? And they turned
something
on
it
or
like
something?
If that. I mean, it was pretty short, and then they got rid of him.
I never understood why they did that. I don't know. Ahmed was always in and out. He's always getting hurt or some shit like that. That's why he never really did anything.
He was hurt. He was crazy.
Yeah. And then they brought The Rock in to make him a member, which is really what got him started, you know, like his character started.
And they brought in Owen, too, right after that.
Yeah, well, that was like the next year. But this just when it was Farouk and
Rock Nation. Yeah.
It was Farouk and Rock and D'Lo and Kama Mustafa. And then later that year, they brought in Mark Henry. And they threw out Farouk and brought in Owen Hart. And, that was when The Rock was getting, it was really getting going at that point.
Yeah.
He was such a great heel at that time. I love him.
Now, speaking of Rock, one of my favorite Rock promos of all time, well, there's two of them actually, but right now I'll talk about the one where it was after the match with Hogan, and I guess he had been away for a while, and he came back to Montreal, and everyone's going crazy, you know, cheering him and going crazy when he comes out, and he starts...
Toronto, actually.
Oh, yeah, that's right, it was Toronto, I'm sorry, it was Toronto. And so he starts telling them, oh, don't be cheering for The Rock yet, you know, and he just starts making fun of people. And then he's like, he just starts ripping the shit out of Toronto. And it was one of the best promos ever, like, just go heel like that. I mean, he pissed these people off fucking bad. I just remember when he ends with the, when he says that the Maple Leafs suck. and they were pissed, and like he's like he did the part where like he kind of said the name of like the town and people kind of cheer, like, you know, the people in like Foley, so the people kind of like cheered. He's off, shut up, and he starts making fun of them. Oh, that's where we're from. And
Toronto, so, that's my city. He said my city.
Yeah, so that's one of Rock's greatest promos, was that one where he just turned on everyone in Toronto. And then the other one was when they were in Arizona, in Sacramento, and he starts doing the Rock concert, and he starts talking about a lot of fat-ass women in Sacramento, and then he's like, I'll see you all in May when the Lakers beat the Kings. He was like, I'll see you back in May when the Lakers beat the Kings in May. I forgot how it went, but he was just so fucking awesome. Those are like the two best.
He may really be like the greatest promo guy of all time, in my opinion.
True.
I mean,
yeah,
I've never seen anybody be able to control the crowd like he could. Never.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah, the only people close are like Austin and Foley, but as far as being able to do both, you know, Austin was, he was great as a doing skits as a heel, but his promos weren't like the best when he was the heel. Whereas Rock was like, it didn't matter if he was heel or face, you know, his shit was always awesome.
Totally. We should bring up CM Punk's pipe bomb from just last year. Heard him on one of my local radio stations yesterday, hyping the 1,000th episode of Raw. And the DJs on the station I listened to, that was the one thing that they grilled him about the most. And he was kind of shooting with them, you know, saying that, you know, there's so much reality missing out of wrestling today, and that he prided himself on that promo because it was organic and authentic and it came from the heart. And none of it was scripted, and that was like one of his crowning achievements, because you know, everything he said off the cuff, and nothing was scripted for him, and just a tremendous promo.
Yeah, I'm trying to think about, you know, apparently there's going to be some kind of a big angle on Monday coming out of the title match, so. I don't know.
Well, I would imagine.
So what?
I think Brian might have it on the nose when he said that CM Punk's going heel.
Possibly.
I think so.
I don't think he's going to lose the title.
No. No, I don't think so either.
I think they're going to do something, just go into SummerSlam with that as another main event. It's funny, it looks like John Cena may be the one that's going to be the first to fail at cashing in Money in the Bank. It's my guess anyway.
Yeah.
And it'd be the only one that really wouldn't hurt too bad, that's for sure.
Yeah,
but
very true.
But to go back to The Rock, probably one of the best three-week storylines they ever did was when he made the fucking Hurricane, or almost made the Hurricane a superstar until Hunter squashed him.
Here we go.
The next week, but I love that. The skits that they had in the back were freaking awesome, and then the match was actually even pretty good, but that was freaking awesome. I mean, that was just that 3 weeks, the three-part thing that he did with the Hurricane was freaking awesome.
Yeah. That was awesome.
When you said the Scorpion also, King has a tiny ding-a-ling.
I'd forgotten about
that. The way The Rock, like, oversold all of his, like, insults.
Rock was good as a heel then, but he was only good as a heel for maybe, like, 2-3 months. Because eventually he's going to, you know, he's just too damn entertaining for anybody to hate.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. Go, who is next? Whoever.
Great, Craig.
Another match to bring up. I had never in my life thought Taka Michinoku was going to win the World Heavyweight Championship, except for the night when he wrestled Triple H. This match was absolutely tremendous. Triple H, he didn't put him over in the end, but he got over with that match. Just a tremendous, tremendous match. I thought Taka Michinoku, like I said, was going to win the World Heavyweight title. That match.
That one broke APA out?
Yeah.
As his bodyguards? Yeah, that was awesome. I mean, just like you, I thought he was going to, I said, this is not going to happen, but, I mean, you have me on the edge of my seat the whole time, and it was a hell of a match.
What did he hit when the crowd went crazy? Was it like a moonsault, or he hit something, and everyone bought it as a finish? I mean,
might have been the
Michinoku driver too.
Yeah,
my finisher.
What's the first Michinoku driver? Just to
throw
it out.
Never seen it.
But that's why when Brian Kendrick, they would say, you did the slice of bread number two. Well, what's the number one?
Was it off the second rope?
Maybe. Maybe since there's nothing better than sliced bread, if you put two behind it, then that's better than sliced bread.
Well, it's better than the second sliced bread. I can't wait until Word 3 comes up.
I love the APA at that time doing that gimmick. Protection agency. They were so. They finally. They were kind of a. You know, they were doing like the Undertaker. You know, Acolyte tag team. But then they finally caught on to something. You know, that Acolyte Protection Agency. That was entertainment right there.
Absolutely.
When they were playing cards in the back, and they had their office, but all they had was the door, and everybody came through the door, even though you could go around it, and they needed something else to bet in poker, and they. Apparently they won Howard Finkel. He said, bet the bitch right there. So they bet the bitch or something. I think they lost Howard.
I just remember they were playing with the Dudley Boys because the Dudley Boys wanted to hire them. And they made some kind of like an ass joke. And then Bubba just says all serious, you don't know me well enough to stick anything up my ass.
That's where the dam started from with Ron Simmons. Became really popular.
Yeah, the APA was awesome. The APA, and then kind of because they did a lot of skits kind of like inter-evolving the hardcore stuff, so you let's shift over to like one of the greatest hardcore runs ever, and that's Crash Holly, who unfortunately isn't with us anymore, but, you know, Crash Holly having matches in the ball, what do you call them? The
ball pit.
The ball pit.
It was like some kind of amusement park where they were chasing down the slides.
Yeah.
Tremendous.
Yeah, that was awesome. And then, like, all the times he'd be, like, just scared for his life backstage. And that, he, when he was, that was the best of the best of the hardcore when they had was actually when Crash was a hardcore champion.
Yeah. I mean, it was all totally ridiculous, but shit, that was some fun stuff. Remember when they had, oh God, the worst hardcore match of all time was the evening gown match with Gerald Briscoe and Pat Patterson?
But the build to the match was awesome.
And you know there was an inside joke there somewhere.
Yeah. I remember I was so excited for that match. I was so excited for that match, but it ended up sucking. But everything they did, that the Stooges were another awesome thing, a part of Raw for a long time,
yeah.
Even though they were just like, you know, Vince's secondaries, but they were so fucking awesome.
Yeah.
I'll never forget when they beat up the Mean Street Posse.
Yeah, I think they came out the Real American.
Yeah. Gerald Briscoe starts making like a fiery comeback, and you're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Pat's still selling like he used to. Pat was one of the best sellers ever. I mean, you could miss a punch by 2 feet, and he'd sell it like you punched him right in the face.
I remember the Corporation had attacked, I think it was Rikishi, and they put Rikishi in the corner. And Pat's going to give him the stink face. He pulled his pants down, and he's got a skid mark on his white drawers.
Oh, they were awesome. They were awesome.
I think that evening gown match probably won the worst match of the year in the Observer.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I bet money on it.
Yeah, I'm pretty safe to say that's a safe bet. But who's next? Or should I go?
I'll talk about one period is maybe creatively one of the best periods, or either just for fan heat, was that summer in 97 with USA and Canada.
That was awesome. I mean, I was there live at one of those shows. I mean, it was so weird. I mean, I don't know if that was, like, how far they booked in advance, because they literally had U.S., Canada, and then...
Seemed like every
know,
other
like,
week they were in the U.S. or Canada.
Yeah, I mean, and it lasted for, like, almost 2 months.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was good stuff.
I mean, yeah, as far as, like, the crowds being in it, because, like, it would be, like, 1 week, you know, Brett's being hated and Stone Cold's being cheered, and the next week it's the total opposite. It was like the first time you could actually say the fans were feuding with each other.
It's kind of that weird thing, you know, where they used to have, like, Jerry Lawler was a heel and WWF was a babyface in Memphis every week. It was kind of weird, kind of like that, but, yeah. And it was some of the promos at that time were just some of the best there's ever been, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Especially a lot of that stuff they were bitching about was all true.
The what?
Mm-hmm.
I said a lot of that stuff, they were like Brett and Sean and shit like that, all that stuff was pretty much true.
Yeah.
They hated each other for.
Yeah.
You had the Sunny Days comment, which I think Sunny needs some Sunny Days. I was watching that video the other day, but anyway.
Oh, Lord.
Did you see the whole video or just a preview?
A preview. It's about 6 minutes.
Yeah.
I like how he makes it a point to talk to her about, yeah, I'm not exploiting you, right? You know? It's like...
Well...
I don't know. That preview, that's all it looked like was an exploitation video. I mean, and she, you know, it's not like she was blame free. She agreed to do it. She did it. I mean...
Well,
you know
can you trust
everything?
Any...
Her life has gone downhill since that cop dude left her.
Yeah.
And if you're a friend on Facebook, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's when she started spiraling. And it was after the Hall of Fame or... She just started spiraling. I mean, I've been seeing this coming for a while. I mean, how many times did she post pictures of a broken nose because she fell down the steps? Matt Hardy style, you know. I mean, I love Sunny. I mean, I'm always one of her biggest fans. I hope she gets her act together. But I mean, that's it.
There's
I don't know
some shit
wanted.
You don't need to know about. Not everybody needs to know about. I guess.
Yeah. It's too bad everybody knows about it right now.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw her in that video, and you know, when Buddy Wayne said the road will own you.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about right there.
Oof. Sometimes she still looks good, though. I mean, everyone's watching. She looked good in Arizona, but that was before she started spiraling.
And she also had the makeup ladies. WWF.
Yeah, that
could make anybody look beautiful.
That's true. And we saw her at the Ring of Honor show, and she looked good too, though. So.
Which one?
The Ring of Honor show we went to in Arizona. She was there.
Yes. Yeah, she looked good. I talked to her. She was like, she seemed level-headed, and she didn't seem like she was on anything at all. She talked to me for like a good 5 minutes. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
And she looked good. I mean, it's just a shame that it's like it's just a pattern, you know, comes and goes, and unfortunately, it's one of those times. But I mean, she was so hot when she was on TV. I mean,
yeah.
I wish she would have had her act together because she would have got the stable push. You know,
maybe never got really the push that her talent should have gotten in the WWF. Same for a while there, you know, she was with the Body Donnas and like the Smoking Guns or whatever, and then she was just like the oh, here's the newest T-shirt. You know, here's Sunny advertising the newest T-shirt or something.
Yeah. Speaking of Sable, we've done an hour and 5 minutes, and we haven't mentioned Sable once in this conversation. Now, as a young man watching Raw growing up, I credit a lot of my drive from one Miss Sable. That girl was absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm just talking in the looks department, by the way. There was the incident where Mark Merrill had her wear the gunny sack.
Sanctified.
And and she stripped it down and... Sweet baby Jesus, what she had on. And she was just awesome. She was, and when she got real, how do I say it without cursing, bitchy, there at the end, that was some good stuff too. And she brought a lot to Monday Night Raw every time she was out there with Mark Merrill and so forth and so on. And their breakout was pretty epic. And she actually holds a win over one Mr. Mark Merrill in a singles match.
Yeah, it was like that was a loser leave match or something like that.
He killed his career in one match, basically. I always thought she was overrated.
What?
She's also in the first pay-per-view match Edge ever had with the mixed tag against, I think it was it Mark Merrill and, maybe Mark Merrill and, who will? Jacqueline, maybe?
I don't even remember.
Remember the thing where she had to leave and then Mark Merrill brought in Jacqueline as his new woman?
Yeah, I kind of remember him being with Jacqueline. I just don't remember this angle.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there was a tag match at like SummerSlam 98. It was Sable picked Edge for a mystery partner, and that was like his first pay-per-view match he's ever in.
Oh, okay.
Huh.
I remember the awesome match they had. Her and Mark Merrill at WrestleMania had an awesome match with Goldust and Luna. That match was great.
I vaguely remember that one as well.
It was in WrestleMania 14 in Boston when Austin won the title.
Yeah, it was okay. It was pretty good.
Oh, whatever, snob.
I just never liked Sable as much as everybody else. I mean, I thought she was hot, but I was a bigger Sunny fan. There was always someone there I liked more than Sable.
You're homosexual, that's why.
Whatever. I mean, she has some nice big titties and shit, but...
Oh, jeez.
I'd take a lot of girls over Sable.
Okay. Well, good for you. Let me see. We never mentioned anything about Terry Funk coming in as Chainsaw Charlie, did we?
No, we're... That was actually one of my favorite episodes when they pushed the dumpster off the stage.
Yeah.
That was awful.
I just remember everybody like, crying.
Yeah. That was like
wasn't
Sunny
like Sunny like going crazy?
Yeah, Sunny was in tears. And and the Outlaws were out there. They said, "Well, we didn't mean to do that."
No. We didn't mean to strap him in a dumpster and push him off the stage.
That was a great angle too.
It was. And it was like a completely safe bump. I mean, they had all these packing peanuts in there and, you know, and you have the crazy man Terry Funk and the crazier man Mick Foley. Actually, it might be Ty now. But, they just took a ride in the dumpster off the thing and off the stage, and everybody thought they were dead for sure. And, yeah.
When you had heels and stuff out there, they were concerned. Like, they were all breaking character because they really got hurt because somebody tried to push the envelope a little bit too much. That's what they played it up as doing. I remember Lawler saying, you know, he was in heel Lawler mode at this point. He said, you know, one of the best matches was one of the biggest rivalries and some of the best matches I ever had with Terry Funk, and these punks come out here and do this, you know.
Actually,
and then about 2 weeks later, but whatever.
And then the pay-per-view match was awesome.
Yeah, they had the eight-man. What was that, the dumpster match?
The dumpster match.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember
the dumpster match was awesome, and then the next day on Raw was pretty big when they're having, like, the cage match, and that's when the Outlaws and DX. And then that's when X-Pac made his debut, didn't he, when he came in and helped attack them in the cage?
He made his debut earlier in the show in a promo, but then he came out and they all joined in. I just remember that dumpster match that Funk had, like, one of the biggest bruises ever seen on his body.
You could see it when they hung him up on Raw in the cage. You could just see that big. It was like his whole kidney was bruised.
And that was the match that turned Mick Foley heel.
I just heard his promo on YouTube the other day where he starts to talk about how the people started cheering for Austin instead of for him and Terry, and he's like, how could you do that? And he just, like, totally turned on the fans on that one. And Jim Ross is all kind of even, why is he being so whiny and so-and-so?
And Funk was on the end for maybe at the very most, like, 5 months, if that.
I think he came in like, early January, maybe. Because they did the thing where they did this. Jack took this horrific bump where they had pushed him, and there was they pushed him off the stage, and he had, like, supposed to land on a table, but he kind of overshot.
Yeah.
He just landed, like, flat on his hip or something like that.
He bounced off the table and then smashed into the concrete.
That was the point where Jack was taking those bumps where he was going to get up. Because I've seen it so many times. And then he brought out a wooden box, and all of a sudden somebody used his chainsaw, and Chainsaw Charlie comes out. And apparently that was an idea Funk had in Japan or something like that, kind of like a Leatherface gimmick, you know?
That was kind of dumb when he came out the first time. He was Chainsaw Charlie. It's like, it's fucking Terry Funk.
Yeah.
and Foley had I guess it was a no rules match on Raw or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I've actually got the story right in front of me. McMahon told Foley he had to prove himself to become the number one contender for the WWE title by beating his good friend Terry Funk in a Falls Count Anywhere match.
Yeah.
And it was in May 4th of 1998. And reading the story on the match, there was at one point they brawled into the crowd and Funk did a moonsault from the second deck of fans, and
I think Stone Cold was doing commentary for that match too.
That makes sense. Foley pulled like this hot dog vendor into him, and then he got mad and actually suplexed the hot dog vendor onto the floor.
Yeah, that
Funk would do those things in those crowds sometimes. Where I don't think the other guy was actually in on that. I'm not sure. He wouldn't know if the guy was supposed to be in on that, or if Funk just went loopy and just attacked an innocent person.
And the finish was fully giving a pile driver through a table, much like the one he did to Triple H in MSG on Raw about a year earlier.
I just remember in Foley's book where he's talking about the Hell in the Cell match, and he's like, he's waking up and he's like, why are there shoes in the ring?
Take your choke slam Funk out of his shoes.
Oh man, that was awesome. One of my favorite things is that we've actually did pretty much the whole show about it was the stuff from the Invasion. There's like clips. Like wrestling, like snippets that you will always remember, you know, like Jim Ross saying, like, "Oh my God, they killed him," and so I'll never forget, especially because I brought up the whole idea on Wrestling Observer Live the week before, and you had a match where it was WCW against WWF, and then, you know, the
Lance Storm and Mike Arkham against Jericho and Kane.
Oh, Dreamer and Van Damme interfered.
Yeah.
Dreamer and Van Damme interfered, and then you see a bunch of WWE guys come down, and they all get in like a line like they're going to jump on Dreamer and Van Damme, and then you just hear Paulie scream, "Fill this moment, JR. Fill this moment for the rest of your life." And that's when you're like, "Oh my God, they're all ECW," and they slowly turn around, and that was just that moment
was awesome. That was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was fantastic. That was like just one of those moments where you don't really see, you didn't see it coming, and because I don't remember there being any news about them coming in that night, you know, whatever. I mean, you talk about a total surprise, and just the way Paulie sold it. I mean, that was awesome.
Actually, Dave, earlier in the day on that, like the Wrestling Observer Live, he said, they're going to bring in, they got the WCW guys there, and this feud may end up being WWF versus WCW and maybe versus some other guys. So he knew something.
No, he was just repeating my idea from that Friday before.
Nobody repeated your ideas back then.
And I'm still waiting for my compensation check from the WWE for writing that whole angle, basically.
Okay, well, I'm sure the statute of limitations has run out.
Unfortunately.
10 years ago, get over it.
That also led to one of the other best Raws of all time, where they did the storyline where Stone Cold was kind of like fed up and was all by himself at the referee's
bar.
Yeah,
Tim White.
So, yeah, Jason White at Tim White's bar. And then basically you had like, they did the speeches where Paul Lee cut an awesome promo to like his troops. And then you had Undertaker and JBL cut awesome promos to like the WWE guys. And that's when they wheeled in a crippled old
Freddie Blassie
starts cutting a promo, and he just stands up on his own, and he starts screaming, "Get up, get up!" I mean, that was awesome.
I think that was the Teddy Roosevelt promo that he did, like after Pearl Harbor or something.
Yeah.
I mean, because it's like that was like almost emotional. I mean,
emotional.
And then they have the big brawl, and then JR is selling this big battle like crazy. I mean, Jim Ross was just like at his best at this time, and then that's when Stone Cold shows up and just fucking runs wild on everybody. I mean, that was one of the best storyline shows of all time.
Yep, that was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
One of the most memorable Raws, just because I was such a huge ECW mark, was the one where they actually had ECW on the show. They were featured on the show, and you had the BWO coming down in the first segment and doing their thing and their shtick, and they actually had some ECW matches on the show, and the debut of one Ken Shamrock in the audience. Just a real good show, I thought.
Wasn't that where Jerry Lawler went up to Shamrock and was acting like he was his buddy, and it was like talking the whole show that they were friends, and then he goes up to Shamrock and he's like, "Who are you?"
Yep. Yeah, good stuff.
I remember the week before, Lawler got an angry phone call on Raw from Paul Heyman saying, "We'll be at the Manhattan Center the next week," which was perfect, because it was like right in the middle of like a ECW territory also, you know, New York at the time. So, yeah.
Yep.
Most of those fans were ECW fans in there.
Absolutely. They were going nuts. Another match I wanted to bring up was January 16th of 2006. It was Ric Flair versus Edge in a TLC match. I loved, loved, loved this match.
Yeah, that was the first ladder match I think he's ever in. Ric Flair.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
And came out of it virtually unscathed. It was a tremendous match, though. One of the best in the last, you know, 5-6 years.
It's like when people say, you know, the last few years of his career, Flair wasn't that good. I thought Flair was pretty damn good the last few years of his career.
Absolutely.
All things considered.
And then another great Raw moment, the Ric Flair retirement,
Well, he didn't really retire, but you know what I mean. It's send-off from WWE. Just a tremendous scene.
That's still maybe the best live moment of wrestling on TV. For me, anyway.
Yeah. I ain't gonna lie. I had a tear in my eye.
You get to see the Four Horsemen, like, together for the first time since, like, 1988.
Yeah.
I love that. That was awesome. If you couldn't appreciate that, then something wrong with you. And it never bothered me that he came out of retirement. I mean, it was not that big a deal to me. I just saw it more as a show of appreciation, like, well, he's gone now, you know.
I mean, it was going to happen.
It's a wrestling retirement. Big deal he came back. I mean, I don't care about stuff like that, to be honest with you.
Yeah. I expect him back on Monday. I really do.
Yeah, I could see that. Unless they got this lawsuit, that makes that bad. The only thing that could stop him, I think. They're worried about the lawsuit.
I don't think he's still employed. I don't think it'll be a problem. I mean, I'm pretty sure he'll be on there. But speaking of, like I was talking about Austin earlier, another one of my favorite show storylines is when Austin kidnapped McMahon.
Yeah, this was the night after he got fired. Remember he said, you better call the match with Kane and Taker down the middle, and I'm going to fire you. And then, you know, both guys were down, and it was for, like, the vacant title. And he went 1-2, and he wouldn't count the three, and he declared himself the winner. And then Vince fired him, which, I don't know. Well, why didn't you fire him all those months ago, you idiot?
But that was awesome, him trying to, like, hide at first, and then after he got, like, kidnapped, and he's pushing him on the wheelchair. And
Austin's down in the parking lot in his truck, and he's got, like automatic weapons. Like machine guns and stuff like that.
He's been hanging out with the guy from Blues Traveler.
Everything that Austin did in that period was awesome. I mean, you know, when he had the gun and he made McMahon piss his pants, that was awesome. The stuff they showed on Raw like a week or two ago, or with the bedpan when he when he attacked him in the hospital and just smashes the bedpan over his head and sticks the thing into his ass, and
that was probably the biggest feud in the history of the show. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and it pretty much started. I mean, didn't it like really, really start when they did the Tyson thing?
Oh yeah.
Anyway, it had been building up because, you know, the year before he gave him the stunner in Madison Square Garden, and it had really been building up to at that point. The Tyson thing was trying to really launch it at that point.
Mm-hmm.
I just remember, you know, they got Austin out of during that Tyson thing. Got Austin out of the ring, and Vince, he is so pissed. He's beyond pissed off. Said, you ruined it. Damn it, you ruined it. And Austin's just out there being held back, and all he does is stick his middle finger up. That's all he's doing. Every man looks like he's fixing to have an aneurysm or something like that. That was so awesome.
Yeah.
Well, that's one thing Vince is very good at, and that's just it, acting like he is pissed off out of his mind or losing his mind.
Yeah.
You know?
And he went to board to piss himself on live TV. You got to admire a man to do that. I'm sure it was real, too.
Oh, sure.
Like we were talking about the dumpster. In one of the, I've seen a Foley interview where he's talking about he wanted to do the test drive.
Yeah.
Before the show started.
We've seen that footage where, you know, in WrestleMania 96, when he went on that thing that Shawn was coming down to the ring, you remember?
You ever
seen that? That footage of Vince, he took the ride to just to test it out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Saw that. Maybe
you
should have tested out Owen Hart's harness, but maybe that's
I wasn't going to bring that up. Thank you. another match I wanted to bring up, something a little bit more recent. April 23rd, 2007, John Cena versus Shawn Michaels in their Raw match that went 55 minutes on TV.
The only problem with this match was it was in England, and it was pre-taped, and I had heard they'd gone like an hour. So,
yeah,
beforehand. But, yeah, I mean, this match, it was awesome, too, because they built up, like, Edge and Orton coming on later in the show. It was like they had the, like the old NWA thing with the time limits. They said, well, if this match ends, we'll have a standby match. or something like
yeah.
that. Yeah, I thought that was awesome. And that was that match went, you know, 55 minutes. Only thing that took it down is I thought it meant a little bit more if the title was on the line because of that song. So that was the only thing that brought
True.
It down for me.
Great match, though. I mean, say what you will about John Cena. When he's in there with a guy that can go, he steps it up.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people you think will go an hour. And I mean, it's not an hour like in a Royal Rumble or something where you can sit around and rest for a few
yeah.
minutes or, you know, pair off with somebody different. It was just an hour. It's just him
yep.
and somebody else. And they didn't really do any gimmicks. No, none
nope.
of that smoke and mirrors bullshit either.
Nope, it was all wrestling.
You know, when you have a really, really great match and it's that long, and even if you know it's that long, you can still have a great match and, like, fool people. Like, I just watched the other day, I watched the Mimi Toyota match. That was a 70-minute match. It was basically in six parts. And in the second part, I'm already marking out for some of the pinfall, thinking that's the finish. I mean, even though I
yeah.
know there's four more parts coming, it's like,
yeah.
like really, really great matches. It doesn't matter if you know what time it ends. I mean, they can, if it's really that good, they can get you on it.
Yeah, I just like the live aspect because it draws me in more when it keeps going like that. If I don't know
yeah,
something.
I hear you.
So.
I hear you.
We got 4 minutes. Let me get the plugs in here real quick. Everyone, check out AngryMarks.com. You can always download and stream our show at AngryMarks.com, along with a lot of other shows and Angry Marks, including the shows by Alex Dolph, who is rudely interrupting me on Facebook as I'm trying to do the plugs for Angry Marks and distracting me because he's such a jerk.
Okay.
So,
well,
yeah,
don't be on Facebook during the show then, and nobody will bother you.
That's true.
Well, I guess that's true, but I left the window open. Let me put doing the show.
There you go.
You jerk. Thank you for. Backspace for. How do you spell interrupting?
I ain't. Thank you for nothing. Just say thank you for nothing.
Yeah, there you go.
Sure.
That's what bad spellers
I'll try
do.
My wacky spelling.
Hey, you can, instead of four, you can use the letter, the number four. So,
sure.
Look at that.
Well, I use the U for I'm the U.
I want to give me one of these new iPhones, the newest iPhones, where you can talk your text.
Oh, yeah, it's great. I love it.
I can do that. I just can't do it while I'm on the phone doing a show.
That's true.
And
it is great driving down the road.
I still haven't found my headset, so I got the damn phone in my ear while I'm trying to type with one hand. So you know how bad I am with two hands.
That's true.
So. But anyway, everyone check out AngryMarks.com. And
right.
We got 1 minute, and we got 2 minutes and a half.
Big shout out to Stevie J who got his his channels back from DirecTV, as did I today.
As did I. We're only a day
late. Pretty happy.
Well, if y'all have Time Warner like me, you never would have missed anything.
Well, Brian was so mad he went out and got Fios by Verizon. So I
kind of did he have DirecTV also?
No, he had Xfinity, which is basically Comcast up here, and he was tired of getting jerked around, which is why I went to DirecTV in the first place.
I got a Fios and Xfinity, but I need Comcast like. Internet to do it, and I don't use Comcast.
Yeah.
Comcast or anything. It's kind of fucked up.
So, to end out the show, what do we know for the 100th or 1,000th episode of Raw? Anything?
John Cena and CM Punk for the title. I expect something
right.
big in the match. Brock Lesnar is going to be there to answer the Triple H's challenge for SummerSlam.
You have a wedding?
Wedding. Lord knows how many people we're going to see. I'm expecting, I don't know how many people are expecting to be on the show. And probably some people will wonder, why did they bring this person back? Steve Blackman? Yeah, I need to see him again.
Okay, guys, we just ran out of live airfare, and I have a date to go to. So I am ending the show now, whether you guys are ready to or not.
I'm okay with that.
I can find this goddamn theme music.
All right.
Oh,
to be the man. You gotta beat the man. You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the Matrix, shit. Let's go hook him up.
Tonight.